Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The president in full tweet storm mode today, blasting what he calls the phony Russian witch hunt. But the investigation and inquiries go on. Today, Jared Kushner before a Senate panel. Coming up, Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, and behind the scenes, special prosecutor counsel Robert Mueller digging away. This hour on Point, the White House now attacking Mueller's team in the pressure cooker of the Russia investigation. You can join us on air or online when this conversation is always on. Is Mueller right to dig into Donald Trump's business affairs? Could you see President Trump actually firing Mueller? Are we on the brink of a constitutional crisis here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear in this hour from a Bloomberg reporter who helped break the story that Robert Mueller is investigating Donald Trump's business history with Russia and with the former White House Ethics Counsel under George W. Bush, Richard Painter. But first, with us now from the Washington Post is reporter Carol Lenick. She's been all over these developments. You can find her piece about President Trump's team seeking to control or block Robert Mueller's Russia investigation at our website, onpointradio.org. Carol Lenick, thank you very much for being with us. Welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
The heat really turned up last week and just kept going higher through the weekend. And we had this interview with the New York Times and then the story coming out that, yes, indeed, Robert Mueller is looking at Donald Trump's business history with Russia. Why was that not inevitable? Why did that get the president in such an apparent Twitter lather?
Well, I think the president has been concerned about that for longer than this week or last week. I think he's been conferring with a lot of advisors and kind of – I've referred to him often as the first legal client. We're watching the first legal client basically – understand the scrutiny he and his family could come under, the questions that could be posed, and really, let's be honest, the reach of a prosecutor. Special Counsel Bob Mueller has all the authorities of a normal U.S. attorney and then some. And these are new pieces of information for the President of the United States. So he's been concerned for a while about his tax returns, and that became very clear in his interview with the New York Times in the middle of last week.
When people talk about this going to a constitutional crisis, describe the scenario that would present that plainly, that would make that real and current.
I'm sorry. What do you mean?
Well, the headlines over the weekend were full of, are we on the brink of a constitutional crisis here? Is that people pointing at Trump maybe trying to take Robert Mueller out of his role?
Well, I think they're responding to a couple of things. One, you saw last weekend, it's hard to keep track, isn't it, Tom? Like,
yes.
Which was, it's all a big blur. You know, to quote the woman from Downton Abbey, what is a weekend anymore? So last weekend, you saw the president's sort of emissaries going out and talking about how Mueller's probe did not have a proper foundation, that it began because of flaws, because of leaks by Comey that were alleged by the White House and his allies, the president's allies. You saw an attempt to sort of undermine the beginnings, really, of this probe. Then we reported, and the New York Times both reported, that the president was questioning and creating a red line and saying, you shouldn't go any further than this. Well, it's not typical for anybody under scrutiny by a prosecutor to say what is the line beyond which a prosecutor should investigate. So that's pretty interesting.
And then that red line having been, don't get into my finances.
Correct. Do not go into my finances or my family's finances. You may remember that his son-in-law, Jared Kushner's finances are pretty complicated, and some have alleged he was in some financial trouble himself for a while. And all of this goes to the issue, as you raise, about constitutional crisis. Then we reported on Thursday about the the president exploring and trying to understand, again, as the first legal client, what are his powers to pardon? You know, he's asking, can I pardon my family members? Can I pardon other people involved in this probe? Can I pardon myself? When can I do this? He's discussing this with his current team of advisors in the last few weeks, and we thought that was interesting that he's asking that question. Plus, now you see these indirect ways in which he is essentially saying to Sessions, telegraphing to Sessions, I'm really not happy with you. It would not bother me if you left. And I think everyone's watching very closely. Is the Attorney General going to step down despite saying last week that he would stay after the president expressed his very scathing critique of the Attorney General?
President Trump, in his tweets today, describing Jeff Sessions as the beleaguered Attorney General. He's talking about his own Attorney General there. Why might the president want this Attorney General to step down? Of course, he criticized him because he recused himself from the Russia investigation because of his own role in the Trump campaign. What would Sessions leaving mean to the president in terms of this investigation?
Well, I mean, again, to your good question about constitutional crisis, if Sessions were to leave, the reason for the probe's creation, or at least one of the first steps that led to the probe's creation and the appointment of the special counsel, would disappear. There would no longer be an attorney general who had a conflict in this probe. And so if you had a confirmed attorney general, or some people have argued even if you had an acting attorney general, a different person who didn't have a potential conflict, had not been advising the campaign or participating in the campaign, which is at the center of this probe, did the campaign collude or coordinate with the Russian government? If that were to be the case, you could envision the Trump White House and the president himself arguing there is no need for a special counsel anymore, and his Department of Justice could handle all this.
Is he looking for an attorney general who would protect him? He complained over the weekend about the Republicans in Congress not protecting their president.
Well, I don't think we can extrapolate to say that based on Republicans versus his attorney general. He's disappointed in Republicans and feels that they're to blame for his legislative agenda not moving forward. There's great disagreement about that. But I think you can take from the president at his word about his disappointment, and he wishes that Sessions had not recused himself. It's kind of ironic because many people in the sort of pundit world and the legal, particularly the legal pundit world, said one of the smartest, most clear line things that Sessions has done is recuse himself, and that is what has irritated the president most.
Carol, what's expected out of the upcoming testimony? In other words, we've got Jared Kushner today. We've got reportedly Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort coming before congressional hearings or interviews, as they put it. What's on the agenda?
So today we've gotten a nice big helping of preview of Kushner's interview with mostly staff at the Senate Intelligence Committee. And that preview is this, that Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, has said, I did not collude with the Russians. I had a limited number of meetings that I can remember with Russian officials or Russian government representatives. He outlines the four meetings that he remembers during the campaign and during the transition in a statement that was released to the media a little bit before 6 a.m. today. He describes all the evidence he can bring to bear that shows he was flooded with inquiries from foreign governments, and the Russian government was one of them, especially after the election. And he declined most of these contacts and conversations. He reveals that he had four meetings, none of them in which he claims there was any coordination. He also makes clear that some of the meetings he tried to essentially get out of because he thought they were a waste of time. Interestingly, was the June 2016 meeting that is a blockbuster kind of development. This was the meeting where Donald Trump Jr. arranged to meet with a Russian lawyer because he believed that she had embarrassing information about Hillary Clinton.
The advance email said so, right?
Yes, it did. And this is right, you know, at a time when Trump is not exactly doing well and nobody expects in any realm of imagination for him to win the election and beat Hillary Clinton. He arranges or agrees to attend this meeting, and Jared Kushner also agrees to attend. And in his statement this morning, he reveals his account of this, in which he sat down, heard the Russian lawyer start talking about adoptions and Russian adoptions, and he thought, this is a waste of my time. And he emailed his assistant and asked her to call him on his cell phone and said, please call. I need an excuse to get out of this meeting.
So there's Jared Kushner today, more upcoming on this front. And meanwhile, the White House looking to kind of undercut the Mueller team itself, going at the backgrounds of who is working for Robert Mueller on this. What kind of material are they putting out?
So this is a really fascinating development, Tom, because, you know, if you've covered Washington crises before, or the legal community, that it, the old hands that really know how this works, you know, there is a very subtle, quiet, controlled vibe usually from that legal team. They don't discuss what they're doing. They don't comment on investigators. They don't publicly try to question the motives of the prosecutor at the center of the case. You know, all of these conversations are quiet and behind the scenes. In this instance, we're learning about these in a very public way, partly because the president is himself tweeting about it and channeling his frustration in a public way, and part of it because the legal team has some disagreement about how to proceed. Some are engaged in a very aggressive war against Mueller and the integrity / appropriateness of the existence of this special counsel investigation. And some of them are the old hands going, hey, guys, let's be quiet. Let's do our work. And let's proceed apace without all this public discussion in the press. But the conflicts issue is something any legal team would look at. It's just that this team is doing it in a very aggressive and public way.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Before we get back to the show, I wanted to tell you to be sure and stay with us till the very end of this podcast for a preview of Freak Out and Carry On. It's WBUR's new podcast that addresses today's politics through a historical lens. Give it a listen, and thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about President Trump, Robert Mueller, and the Russia investigation. Jared Kushner, Donald Jr. going before committees, Paul Manafort, the president talking about pardons and pushback in a whole lot of tweets over the last week and more. Carol Lenig is with us from The Washington Post. She's been right in the thick of reporting on all this. We'll hear in just a moment from the Bloomberg News reporter, who was part of the team that told the world Robert Mueller, yes, indeed, is looking at Donald Trump's business history with Russia. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think? Should anything get in the way of Robert Mueller completing his investigation? Should Donald Trump's business history with Russia be off limits? Should Jared Kushner, Donald Jr., everybody be testifying under oath? They are not this week. If there's no problem here, why is the president talking about pardons or complete pardon power? Would President Trump dare to fire Robert Mueller, Jeff Sessions, Rob Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general there? Over the weekend, CNN's Reliable Sources, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway mixed it up with host Brian Stelter about the Russia investigation, how the media is covering it, and listen to her description of Robert Mueller and his team.
Many people are afraid that if this president fires Robert Mueller, we will be in a constitutional crisis. Why doesn't the president just want Mueller to prove that Trump is right, that Russia was a hoax? Why doesn't he just want Mueller to go ahead and confirm that for him?
Well, isn't Mr. Mueller and his band of Democratic donors doing that? Aren't they trying to do that? But look, Brian, let's back up. Again, I'm asking you to please cover the issues that America are telling pollsters, including CNN's pollsters. You at CNN are not even making good. You're not being honest to your own polling if you look at the issues that people say are most important to them. You're not covering them. You just went right back to Russia.
I think people can care about multiple issues at the same time.
So Kellyanne Conway going after CNN, going after Robert Mueller and his what she called their band of Democratic donors. What's the basis for that, Carol?
So very famously, the president himself has been very agitated about the fact that some of the key leaders or deputies within Mueller's special counsel probe have given money to Hillary Clinton and other Democratic candidates. And so this is something that has been like a fly in the ointment. It is not something that typically disqualifies someone from being an investigator. People make political contributions. If they were enormous bundling amounts, it might raise the stakes, but this is not typically something that disqualifies someone. I just want to remind your listeners that the reason that the conflicts issue being brought up so publicly by Trump's team is interesting and curious is that one of the grounds for removing a special counsel, in this case Bob Mueller, is citing conflicts. The attorney general is the person with the power to remove the special counsel.
And in this case, the Deputy Attorney General, Rob Rosenstein, because Jeff Sessions has recused himself from this front.
Correct.
So that's where the rub would come. And there's talk that the president might push for that removal. And what if the Deputy Attorney General says, no, I'm not removing the special counsel here. I won't do that.
Well, I mean, I think everyone who is older than 45 is remembering or has read about this, is thinking of the Saturday Night Massacre.
This is the Watergate era sort of you can share with listeners what that was. Many are not over 45.
So President Nixon wanted his attorney general to do certain things, then wanted a special counsel removed. Two political and one career person refused. And in fact, they resigned when he wanted to fire Archibald Cox. They refused to do it for him, and they resigned rather than agree to do it. The president ultimately had another person step in as the acting attorney general and remove Cox.
So this referred to as the Saturday Night Massacre. It happened over the weekend and, of course, raises the specter of President Trump pushing people out of the attorney general's office or firing them or pushing them into resignation until he found somebody who would do his will and get rid of Mueller.
Well, we'll see what the president does. I mean, I think this all the atmosphere about this is something we should all keep close watch on because it's so unusual. The president bashing his attorney general publicly, the president asking his advisors and discussing with them the issue of whether he can pardon various people in this case, the president registering frustration in a very public way about why Mueller should be looking at his finances and sort of sending out this public salvo to Bob Mueller, don't cross this line. The president's legal team repeatedly saying that if they feel that Mueller crosses the line, they will formally object. And they'll object to him first, and if necessary, they'll go further. They don't say what go further means. But I think all of this vibe and all of the atmospherics hearken to that time of the Saturday Night Massacre, or at least put people on alert that this may be something the president feels is worth fighting down to that point.
Depending how he sees the stakes. Carol Linick with The Washington Post, please stand by. It is terrific to have you here. Greg Farrell joins us right now from New York, Pelham, New York, reporter with Bloomberg News, part of the team that put out the story last week saying, hey, yes, Robert Mueller is looking into Trump business transactions as part of the Russia investigation. Greg Farrell, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
What's the range of Trump's business history or transactions that the Mueller team is looking into and why?
Well, one of the things I think that caused some concern over this is that it goes back more than 10 years. In the 2000-aughts, a lot of Russian money was invested. A lot of Russians bought properties in the Trump UN Plaza development. Trump enjoys a good following among Russian nationals, and what we learned is that Bob Mueller is taking an expansive view so far of the business relationships between Russians and Trump going way back, not just in the last 2 to 3 years.
The UN Plaza development, that's what, condos around the UN?
Yeah, yes, exactly. And Bloomberg had a very good story earlier this year about the amount, disproportionate number of apartments in that complex that were purchased by Russian nationals.
You go all the way back to the purchase of a big house Trump owned in Florida back in 2008. What was that?
Yes. So the anytime there's an investigation, financial investigators look for economic transactions that don't make sense or, don't on the face of it seem to add up. And in 2004, Trump bought a luxurious mansion in Palm Beach, Florida, an oceanfront mansion for $41 million out of bankruptcy. The owner had gone bankrupt and he got a good price on it. 4 years later, in March of 2008, a Russian oligarch, Dmitry Rybolovlev, purchased it for $95 million. And it wasn't as though the place had been, a lot of money had been invested in it. So the Russian oligarch paid more than twice the amount in a market that was starting to deflate. The bubble had burst by then, and things it wasn't as though we were in an era of soaring prices. So that's an unusual transaction, and the oligarch has explained or said what he wanted and why he bought it, and he has a history of paying a lot of money for fine art as well, so it could just be that he had enough money that he really didn't care to haggle. But that's the type of thing that investigators pay attention to.
The Miss Universe pageant that was in Moscow, they're looking at that. What's to look at? What's to see?
Well, again, there's a financial transaction at the base of that. And Trump himself, is the owner of that. And another prominent Russian who's friendly with Trump, Agalarov, whose son Amin, eventually reached out and started this meeting that the New York Times wrote about that occurred in June of 2016. Anyway, this Russian developer, Agalarov, paid $20 million, about $7 million of which was a licensing fee to the Trump Organization to bring Miss Universe from Las Vegas to Moscow in 2013. And Trump himself went over there, and he was part of the promotion of it, and he was on TV a lot there, and it was a prestigious event for the Agalarovs. And anyway, so that's a business transaction as well.
How might these things add up to a problem? I mean, they might not exactly make sense. A lot of money flying around Russia, but the heart of what Mueller's been tasked to do is look at whether there was collusion with Russians and the Trump campaign over the 2016 election. How could these things fit together?
Well, that's why they're digging into this. It could be that every one of these transactions, from the purchase of apartments, et cetera, are all just transactions, and Russians like Trump. They like his properties. They want to park money over here in the U.S., and it's not the fault of Donald Trump that he's a developer and sells apartments to an international clientele. And it could be the same, the Miss Universe is a prestigious property to a certain segment of people, and it was a big deal in Moscow. So it could be that every one of these economic transactions is fine, and that there'll be nothing there. However, if they scratch the surface and find that, again, there's a disproportionate amount of money being paid or some other element of it, known or unknown to Trump, that's part of the economic transactions, that's what they'll dig into.
And then there's money laundering in Paul Manafort. What's that look like?
Well, first of all, there was a case that was developed in New York, several threads of it involving Paul Manafort.
The former chairman of the Trump campaign, yeah.
Correct. And one of them goes back a number of years to 2008, to a development that Manafort, a real estate development company he put together with money from a Ukrainian. And afterwards, there was litigation of it. Yulia Tymoshenko, the former prime minister of Ukraine, brought a suit in New York that was eventually dismissed for lack of venue, not necessarily for the merits of her case, against Manafort and the oligarch named Firtash, who made a lot of money in energy sales. So, there's been not just civil litigation, but eventually an FBI investigation into the money flows surrounding that. And that was a case that was being brought here by the pursued by prosecutors in the office of Preet Bharara. The U.S. was fired by Trump in early March. So after that occurred, I think there was a bit of a lull in the investigation, and Team Mueller has picked up that, and any other existing investigations from around the country involving Trump or related matters, I think, is now being managed by Mueller's team.
That's a lot on the table, though exactly how you turn it into collusion, it takes some more steps there, if indeed those steps are there at all. Greg Farrell with Bloomberg News, please stand by. And Carol Lennick with The Washington Post. Richard Painter joins us right now from St. Paul, Minnesota. He was chief White House ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush. He's now a professor of corporate law at the University of Minnesota. Richard Painter, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're listening as Greg Farrell, whose team looked at all this, describes the array of Trump business dealings that Robert Mueller is reportedly, as they're reporting, now looking into. Strictly as an ethics issue, are those a problem? They're in the president's past. He wasn't president of the United States then. He was a businessman. And what about as part of Robert Mueller's writ? I don't know how much you can or want to say about that, but do those look like appropriate targets for his investigation to you?
Well, anything involving Russia is relevant to this investigation. And the special counsel, Robert Mueller, has to find out what financial dependencies both the Trump family and the Kushner family have had or continue to have on Russia. The financial dealings with Russia are very, very important. We need to know that. That doesn't mean that there is criminal conduct involved. We don't know. He needs to find out the facts, and he's entitled to find out those facts. It's central to his investigation because he needs to know how close the Trump team was to the Russians, what dependency relationships there were, what efforts there might have been by the Russians to blackmail people in the Trump organization, or what efforts to collude there might have been with in connection with the computer hacking. We don't know the facts, but Robert Mueller certainly has the obligation to look into the Trump finances with respect to Russia, and the same with the Kushner family.
What
finances.
Would constitute,
he has no choice.
What would constitute a dependency relationship? I mean, people do business all the time, and both sides depend on the other to come through, to pay what they promise, to deliver the goods. But you must be describing something more than that. What would constitute a problematic dependency relationship?
Well, in the real estate business, the real estate developers are highly dependent on the debt financing and also other equity partners in the venture, often up to 80, sometimes 90% for some of the Trump projects of the financing is debt financing. We saw that in the Atlantic City casino that went bankrupt. A lot of the New York banks, the American lenders, pulled back from the Trump organization in the mid-1990s after those bankruptcies. And Donald Trump went elsewhere to borrow money. We don't know where that is because these are private companies. If they're public companies, it would all be disclosed in a securities filing. We don't know where the money is borrowed from.
But it's not criminal to borrow money.
Absolutely not. But those are dependency relationships, and it is important to know whether that involves Russia. I think this, given the criminal conduct, we know there was criminal conduct. The criminal conduct was engaged in by Russian operatives inside the United States conducting espionage, gathering their dirt on Hillary Clinton. We now know of a meeting in Trump Tower where the Trump campaign was promised dirt on Hillary Clinton by the Russians, and the top three people from the Trump campaign show up. We certainly at this point ought to know about any financial relationships between the Trump organization and the government of Russia or banks that are close to the government of Russia when Russia has been engaging in such criminal activity inside the United States. And there is evidence of collaboration with the Trump campaign. That doesn't mean that a crime was necessarily committed in connection with the financial relationships. But Robert Mueller has an obligation to find out what they are, to find out the facts, and then we can sort out whether crimes were committed.
Carol Lenning, what would it take for Congress to go to impeachment? I mean, that's what this is really about, right? Whether or not they would go there. What kind of smoking gun do you think it would take in these terms?
Well, it will take a very – I mean, that's way – we're way ahead of ourselves there, because that will require probably a change in the majority for one of the houses at least.
In other words, Republicans would never do it, you're saying?
It doesn't appear at the moment that that would be something interesting to them. We're getting way, way ahead of ourselves.
Well, I mean,
so you're way ahead.
But Donald Trump and his team are pushing back real hard right now. I mean, they're looking down the road. That's what...
Surely, but impeachment isn't their number one worry. Their number one worry is, what does Bob Mueller find as he keeps pulling every one of these threads? And I think, well, we can talk about it later, but I think Richard raises a very good point about finding the facts to determine what they mean.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Trump, Robert Mueller, and the Russia investigation, Jared Kushner, Donald Trump Jr. going before committees on Capitol Hill, Paul Manafort, the president talking about pardons and pushback. We've got Carol Lenning with us from The Washington Post, has been deep into the coverage of all this. Greg Farrell with Bloomberg News, who's been looking at the business dealings in the Trump arena that Robert Mueller is now, they report, looking at as part of his investigation. Richard Painter is with us from St. Paul, Minnesota. He was chief White House ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush. He's now at the University of Minnesota and teaching law there. You can join us this hour. What do you see in Robert Mueller's investigation? Is he going too far? If there's no problem here, why is the president talking about pardons, complete pardon power? Would President Trump dare to fire Robert Mueller? Jeff Sessions, Rob Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general there, would that put us in a constitutional crisis? On ABC's This Week yesterday, Jay Sekulow, on President Trump's legal team there, said it's an open question whether the president has the authority to pardon himself. But he said that's not something that they're looking into at the White House.
From a constitutional legal perspective, you can't dismiss it one way or the other. I think it's a question that would ultimately, if put in place, would probably have to be adjudicated by the Supreme Court to determine constitutionality. The document itself, we talk about the document, the Constitution, Article 2 is very clear. The president has the power to pardon. But again, there's academics are arguing both sides of this. And as I said, we're not researching it. I haven't researched it because it's not an issue we're concerned with or dealing with.
Not an issue. Not an issue. But the new White House communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, said on Fox News Sunday, yesterday, President Trump is talking about pardons in the White House.
I'm in the Oval Office with the president last week. We're talking about that. He says he brought that up. He says, but he doesn't have to be pardoned. There's nobody around him that has to be pardoned. He was just making the statement about the power of pardon.
Just making the statement, just talking about the power of pardon there on the a couple of voices from the White House circle. Critics, plenty. Here's Adam Schiff. This is on Face the Nation yesterday. California Democratic congressman said he's concerned about President Trump's comments that it would be a violation if Special Counsel Robert Mueller looked into his finances.
The president is clearly worried that Bob Mueller is going to be looking into allegations, for example, that the Russians may have laundered money through the Trump Organization. That is really something, in my opinion, he needs to look at, because what concerns me the most is anything that could be held over the president's head that could influence U.S. policy. That would be among the most powerful form of compromise. So I think it is something he needs to look at. It's something, plainly, the president is very concerned about, but clearly within the scope of Mueller's investigation.
Compromise, kind of compromising material that Soviet Russian intelligence has specialized in holding over people. And then you've got the Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Chuck Schumer, saying, wow, if the president did take steps to fire Robert Mueller or go big with pardons, there'd be a big issue. Here with Schumer.
If he fired Mueller or pardoned himself or someone close to him under investigation, it would be one of the greatest breaking of rule of law, of traditional democratic norms, of what our democracy is about. I think it would cause a cataclysm in Washington.
Okay, that's strong language. Carol, Greg, Richard Painter, calls for all three of you. Paul in Atlanta, Georgia. Paul, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just wanted to make a comment about the Robert Mueller investigation, and the Trump team needs to be transparent with this. We have every right to know. We saw this coming from a mile away with his public dealings and with foreign entities, and if it violates the public trust, we need to know about it and then react to that.
So go get in there, lay it all out. The Trump administration in the past has said, look, he's a big businessman. There's too much to put on the table here. It gets into his private matters. Back off.
People want to know the truth, and the truth is all we ask for.
Yeah, that's a pretty simple request, but not simple to pull off. Paul, I appreciate your call from Atlanta. Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, you're on.
Hey, Tom. So I was calling with a point which I'd like to make, but first, something sort of occurred to me based on this conversation. The premise of the show seems to be, you know, should Mueller look into Trump's finances? And, you know, everyone knows, they're experts, and I believe, including yourself, of course Mueller should look into his finances. That's just how you do an investigation. It shouldn't even be a question.
Well, shouldn't, but you say shouldn't, but I mean, last week the president said, he sort of said, this is a red line. If he gets in there, that would be a breach of his writ.
Exactly. The president said that,
yeah.
Putting out propaganda. And, you know, I want to be really careful about allowing that propaganda to be given the same weight as, you know, what everyone knows, which is that, of course, Mueller should be looking into it. And it scares me a little bit, when a great show like yours, ends up doing that, probably just for stylistic reasons.
Well, it's not so much stylistic. I mean, this is the perpetual thing, or has been so far with the Trump administration.
Yeah.
He's the president. So when he's saying it, and he has the power, ultimately, to kind of, he could probably push through a firing. So what are you going to do, just ignore what's the White House?
So I would
Carol, come in here with Gabe.
Gabe, I would just opine, regardless of how the conversation is framed, you're absolutely right. Mueller has every right to look at every player's finances in this. Jared Kushner's, Paul Manafort's, Michael Flynn's, the president's, any prosecutor who's had any time in their chair is going to tell you that is an absolute no-brainer. It's just that, remember, again, my frame is the first legal client. He's learning this. He's not so happy to hear this. He's been under scrutiny in many different ways by gambling commissions, by different regulators, but never this kind of criminal investigation, never with this kind of broad reach. And he's learning this, but most prosecutors know this is absolutely the territory that the special counsel has to go. This is the road he has to go down.
Richard Painter, you were the top ethics guy in the White House. Is it correct for this president even to be firing across the bow of Robert Mueller in the way he is? Is it ethically right?
No, it's not. He should be focusing on doing his job let this investigation take its course. Robert Mueller isn't running around saying a bunch of stuff. He's just doing his job. And furthermore, at this point, I think Kellyanne Conway ought to be fired. She's going out there attacking Robert Mueller publicly and his staff. That is inappropriate conduct. She would have lasted about 1 week in the Bush administration. But we put up with lie after lie from her and several of the others in that White House. But they crossed the line when they attacked the character of Robert Mueller and his staff in order to try to obstruct justice. So the White House staff have no business doing that. The people who are doing that ought to be fired, and the president ought to focus on his job.
But who, I can't hear anyone in the White House who would be talking in that way. Does he have an ethics advisor right now in your former capacity? Are they talking to the President Trump and saying, fire Kellyanne Conway, that is unethical?
I have no idea what his ethics advisor is saying to him. The last thing I heard from his ethics advisor was they wrote a letter to the Office of Government Ethics saying the government ethics rules don't apply to the White House staff, which is just flat out wrong. So I don't know what's going on over there in that White House. But once again, when you've got spokespeople for the White House who are attacking the character of Robert Mueller and his staff simply for doing their job, that is crossing a line of unacceptable conduct. And Kellyanne Conway and the rest of them are doing that ought to be fired.
Beth in Louisville, Kentucky. Beth, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say I am from a red state. I'm a registered Republican. I'm also a coal miner's daughter. So it's what they say, that jobs and things like that are real important to us. That is true. But what's not true is to say that we in the red states and in the so-called Trump country, that we don't care about this investigation. That's absolutely false. This investigation is really, really important. And I don't like the way that the administration is out there trying to undermine it. I'm insulted by it. And I've voted Republican my whole life. But I'll tell you what, Congress needs to pay attention, especially Mitch McConnell, who's from Louisville, as you all know. And if Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul don't pay attention, and if they allow the administration to obstruct this investigation, and if they are not willing to entertain the thoughts of impeachment, if we find that the president is guilty of even of just obstructing justice, then 2018, I'll change my vote, and I'm not the only one, and I just want you all to know that.
Beth, I really appreciate your call from Louisville there in Kentucky. Thank you very much for that. Let me get one from next door in Tennessee, if I may. Thank you, Beth. Craig in Brentwood, Tennessee. Craig, you're on.
Tom, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Please tell me, you seem like the voice of reason here. How did we get to a special prosecutor? I'm a Democrat. Trump wins the election, and then you hear, 16 intelligence agents said the Russians had something to do with it, but nobody tells you what they did. Special prosecutors, somebody's going to get indicted, because I'm old enough to remember Whitewater and Ken Starr, and the next thing you know, President Clinton is with Monica Lewinsky. Same thing with Scooter Libby. This is a disaster, and the unintended consequences will be at the ballot box in middle America.
Let me understand, Craig. Are you saying they shouldn't have even looked into this, even though we had our intelligence agencies saying Russia was deeply involved in trying to affect the outcome of the 2016 election and raising the possibility of collusion with the Trump campaign? So, and then we should ignore that?
I'm saying that's exactly what we should do, because nobody, no intelligence agency, even Comey said he wasn't under investigation, said nobody could say what the Russians did, besides maybe get on Facebook and make some false statements. But nobody, how do they collude? Nobody can say that. But now we're going to look at Trump in the Miss Universe pageant up there in Moscow, that, and all this other stuff. I'm telling you, it's an address for trouble for the Democratic Party.
Richard Painter, speak to the American people will decide on the politics of this. But on the face of it, you hear a voter there who doesn't think we should even have a special counsel on this. It doesn't merit it.
Well, I don't care about the Democratic Party. I'm a Republican. I care about our country. I do not like Russia conducting espionage inside the United States. We know the Russians engaged in computer hacking over at the DNC. And also in the Clinton computers, the Clinton law firms, or the Clinton Foundation, a whole bunch of Americans had the computers hacked, and the stuff ends up on WikiLeaks. So we know there's criminal activity by the Russians. That's very clear. We also know that they engaged in that criminal activity to get the dirt on Hillary Clinton. We know that the Russians wanted the sanctions lifted, the sanctions imposed by the Obama administration. And then they show up at the Trump Tower with the dirt on Hillary Clinton that they promised in that email. With three people attending a meeting who were very concerned about getting the sanctions lifted. It's pretty clear what the quid pro quo is there. And who shows up? The top three people from the Trump campaign. We got a problem here. It's an American problem. It's not a Democrat problem or a Republican problem. But it's an American problem because we got a foreign power that is intervening in our elections, gathering dirt on candidates, and then trying to use that as leverage to get the sanctions that are lifted on Russia. And that should not be tolerated. No one should have accepted that meeting in the Trump campaign. They should have called the FBI. And that's why we are in the situation we're in today. And Bob Mueller is going to have to figure out what happened have a report.
Was sitting down to talk with those Russians when they promised dirt on Hillary, is that criminal?
It could be because, first of all, you have the election laws which prohibit foreign nationals from providing financial assistance or other contributions in kind to American political campaigns. That type of collaboration could very well violate campaign finance laws to begin with. Second, if it became apparent that the Russians had material that they obtained through computer hacking, and you meet with them to decide what to do with it, that itself is a crime. Just like if someone has child pornography and then you start to distribute it or collude to decide what to do with it, that could be a crime. We have a range of different criminal sanctions for conduct, which essentially is treasonous. We don't prosecute as treason unless we're in a state of declared war, and that's what the Constitution provides for in a state of declared war. But we have a range of different statutes that deal with people who are colluding with a foreign adversary, and also the false statement statutes. They've been lying about the contacts with the Russians since day one, going all the way back to General Flynn. And that's what Alger Hiss got sent to jail for 4 years for back in the late 40s. He lied about a contact with a man who was working with the Russians, Whitaker Chambers, and Alger Hiss just forgot about the meeting. Well, he got 4 years in prison for that. We take this type of thing very seriously when foreign powers are conducting espionage inside the United States and engaging in other hostile acts, and Americans are working in collusion with them.
Carolyn, why are the sorry, Greg? Yes, please.
Yes. Well, at one point, Craig, in his call, brought up something that hasn't been addressed here, and that is if you look back to the Whitewater probe and Ken Starr, I think there's a widespread perception that Ken Starr started off with a focus on Whitewater, but ended up, you know, looking around and around and around till he found something. And you know, I think there's, you know, Mueller doesn't strike me as that type of prosecutor, but I could see where among people, you know, a lot of people wouldn't like the idea you've just got a prosecutor looking for anything anywhere that he can find.
Of course, he's looking at connections with Russia. Why, Carol, why aren't Jared Kushner and Donald Jr., when they get set up, why are they not under oath before Congress this week? Why not?
Because that's what they negotiated. And
why would
the way,
Congress put up with that?
Because they want their statements, but also I think you have to remember that under the statute, they can still be charged with false statements. Them being under oath is not really that important.
Okay.
If they give a statement to Congress and to federal officials that does not square with their answers or their depositions or their testimony to other federal agents, the FBI, for example, or does not square with the documents that the investigators find, they will be facing another false statements charge. One thing I would add is that to the caller, the reason this is so important is we don't have clear evidence of a crime, but we have a lot of whiff of a crime about collusion between the Trump team and the Russians. For example, on the day of the Trump Tower meeting in June, you may remember while Donald Jr. was negotiating that meeting the same day, the president announced he would later have some really good information about Hillary that he wanted to discuss with his campaign supporters.
Yeah.
That announcement never came, but that was a pretty interesting announcement to make.
Americans deserve to know the facts. We'll see where it goes. Carol Lenning with The Washington Post, we are very grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you, as always. Greg Farrell with Bloomberg News. Greg, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely, Tom.
And Richard Painter, a Chief White House ethics lawyer for George W. Bush, thank you so much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Ron Suskind.
And I'm Heather Cox Richardson.
We're the hosts of Freak Out and Carry On, a new politics and history podcast from WBUR.
Hey, thanks for sticking around for this preview from our show. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Freak Out and Carry On wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a listen to this excerpt. Let's welcome our guest, Nick Ameli, director of the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, author of The End of Big, How the Internet Makes David the New Goliath. Welcome, Nico.
It's great to be here.
So, Nico, there's a widely accepted narrative that the media enabled Trump during his rise, during his campaign and his victory. But also, haven't they been enabling him during those first 100 days? Tell me what the evidence shows as to how Trump has been signing up the media as his handmaiden.
So we've done five studies, all of 2015, 2016, and the first 100 days of Trump, looking at media coverage, mainstream major media coverage of Trump, everything from Fox News, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, et cetera. The truth is the media during the campaign overwhelmingly gave Trump positive coverage. Mm. However, one of the reasons for that is that a lot of the stories were driven by polling. And the story was always that Trump was rising in the polls.
New CNN ORC polls very much about Donald Trump's huge lead as the choice of Republicans for the presidential nomination.
Despite all kind of conventional wisdom to the contrary, he was winning. And it won in the primaries. And so that favors Trump in a really overwhelmingly dramatic way.
However, how about the first 100 days?
In the first 100 days, the coverage is overwhelmingly negative. However, most of the time in the first 100 days, the only person that the media quotes on Trump is Trump. I think it's 6% of the time they quote a Democrat, 4% of the time a congressional Republican, almost no policy experts. The stories about Trump, quote Trump. And so it's a very weird dynamic in that sense. It is overwhelmingly negative, but it's also all Trump all the time.
It's a reality show. They're going to the star.
Compared to the last three presidents, he dominates news coverage. So much more of the nightly newscast is about Trump than in the first 100 days than any prior president. It's really astonishing, almost to the exclusion of all other news.
I mean, he's
like, I'm talking about sports news and weather news. Like, he crushes it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Is somebody mentioned sports news. I'll just mention this. Is that years ago, an ABC producer, I used to talk for Ted Koppel, said, why do people watch sports on television? I said, well, I don't know. It's neatly lined. They're winners and losers. No. It's the only thing that occurs on television. It actually happens. Everything else is produced. Trump occurs on television. You can't take your eyes off of him.
In the 2 years of the presidential campaign, it doesn't matter which candidate or which issue. Pick any candidate, and Trump is quoted 2 to 3 times more in an article about that candidate than the candidate themselves.
Good God.
Trump is quoted more on Ted Cruz than Ted Cruz is. Trump is quoted more on Hillary Clinton than Hillary Clinton.
He had the best lines. Lying Ted, crooked Hillary, low energy Jeb. I mean, you know, you can't not credit a kind of twisted genius in managing that. He hung that around their neck in bully fashion. That's your name now.
I think a crucial question for the media is how they will cover the presidential campaign in 2020. Will they do anything differently?
Well, the problem is if you are either covering Trump or covering the resistance to Trump, he is still defining the narrative.
That's right.